My name is Sarah Claver, and I'm supposed to be at home in Wisconsin working on my dissertation for my biology degree. Instead, I'm freezing my ass off in a dive bar in Alaska, almost a week into the hunt for my PhD advisor, Robert Olsky. And it's not my fault there isn't an internet connection in the remote village he hid away in. I tried to be accommodating by mailing back and forth my paper, but then the letters stopped returning altogether. You could have at least called. I don't know how you got your wife to stay in this beastly place. I glared accusingly at him across the table, my arms wrapped around myself for warmth. It was so cold that the glass was frosted inside and out. The gloomy little den felt like it belonged to a wild creature. I couldn't imagine why anyone would live here unless they weren't allowed to be anywhere else. My wife is always looking out for me. Besides, you are doing fine without me, Dr. Olsky grunted, not looking up from the steaming wooden mug he clutched in both hands. His white and wispy manicured beard had grown immense and unruly in the months since I'd seen him last at the university. Two planes, second one was held together by spit and glue, I complained. Robert chuckled and nodded, taking a long drink. I think he had clam chowder in there. Then the bus. Then I had to rent a jeep and navigate that switchback road that a caribou would have gone around. Do you think I would have gone through all of that if I didn't need you?
I didn't ask you to come here,
Dr. Olsky growled, wiping his beard with the back of his arm in a way that I couldn't imagine the dainty professor doing before he left. He looked exactly like the locals now, as much animal as man. But then his dark eyes darted up at me, the same old intelligent twinkle buried deep within the weathered and weary face. Why didn't you come back when you were supposed to? I felt myself growing annoyed at the bitterness in my voice. Here I was, like this was all some grand conspiracy against me, when it was clear Robert had endured some great suffering in the frozen north. You should have enough time to track every wolf in Alaska by now.
Maybe I've got rabies, Dr. Olsky chuckled again,
the muffled sound slowly fading as his thick eyebrows drew together in a thunderous scowl.
The gray wolves are smarter than I am, though. They can smell when the land is dying, and they run from it while humans linger. I don't think there are any wolves left here anymore.
Land is dying? What are you talking about? This place is as far from civilization as you can get. I didn't even know there were forests this thick in North America.
But did you see any animals on your drive?
Dr. Olsky asked. The pleading was in his voice now, his eyes wide and desperate as his thin neck strained toward me.
Well, no, not next to the road. But did you see any footprints? Any ravens or gerfalcons nesting in the branches? Any hunters or fishermen left? Or was it just quiet?
Robert's eyes slid away from me, staring over my shoulder and prompting me to turn. A man dressed in gray and white camouflage was watching us from the end of the bar, his face inscrutable behind his small, round spectacles and bushy mustache.
There's one hunter left, the man said, standing stiffly and moving to join us at our corner table.
Go home, Hank, Dr. Olsky said wearily. You too, Sarah. Go home and leave me be.
He knows where the wolves are going, but he isn't saying, Hank said, clapping Robert on the shoulder with a meaty hand.
The professor tried to lean away, but Hank held on.
Aren't you going to introduce me to your daughter, old man? He added, grinning in my direction. Not my daughter. She's one of my students, Dr. Olsky began. Going all the way to visit your icy ass? Evening, sweetheart. My name's Hank Saxton, and I'm the closest thing Robert has to a friend up here. He still won't tell me a damn thing about what's happening to this place, though. Ain't that right, buddy?
Robert Olsky just scowled at the hand on his shoulder until it finally dropped away.
Go home, he repeated, softly into his beard. I won't help you, chasing something that doesn't want to be found.
Won't or can't?
Hank asked, grinning down at Robert, who stubbornly refused to look at him.
Maybe your student will find what you missed then. Moose, reindeer, brown bears, doll, sheep, musk ox. I'll still see them from time to time, although not as many as I used to. The gray wolves, though, this place used to be teeming with them, and I haven't seen one for ages. They aren't just wandering off, either. There aren't no tracks leaving this place. What do you say, Sarah? I can show you where the wolf lairs used to be, and maybe you can tell me what's been happening to them.
No!
The clatter of Dr. Olsky's wooden chair spinning to the floor gave me a jolt. He was standing now, mad eyes darting in every direction as though surrounded by invisible foes.
Sarah isn't a part of this. I forbid you to stay. leave this place tonight and tell the university I'm not coming back. I put too much effort into getting here to give up that easy, I protested. Okay, Hank, you got yourself a deal. Tomorrow morning, we'll check out the layers and see what we can find.
That's more like it, Hank grinned broadly. Sorry your old man's too embarrassed to admit he can't figure it out.
I'm coming too, Dr. Olsky interrupted fiercely. Hell of a lot of trouble you'll get into without me. Messing with things you don't understand. What's a hunter like you want the wolves back for, anyway? Don't they compete with you for game? I asked Hank as I drove the Jeep the next day. He was sitting up front with me while Robert sat in the back, arms crossed, scowling and muttering to himself.
What's the fun of hunting something that can't fight back? Hank asked cheerfully. I'm in it for the sport and the pelt, not the food, and I take no pride in shooting something in the back.
We're going too far, Robert grumbled behind us. We should have parked by now.
You lost the right to give directions when you made it clear you stopped caring about finding them.
Hank shot back.
Keep on going, as far as you can before the trees get too thick.
I pulled off on the side of the trail anyway, trusting Dr. Olsky to know best.
Fine, I don't mind the walk, Hank said, hopping out of the Jeep. See the raven watching us?
Dr. Olsky said in a hushed tone. The large bird was tilting its head from one side to the other, evidently inspecting us from the branches of a nearby spruce tree.
Ravens and wolves often hunt together up here, Dr. Olsky continued. They'll lead the pack on the hunt, helping them find prey from the air, or flushing them out from the underbrush. Then the wolves will share their victory after they've moved in for the kill. Some ravens will even form close personal relationships with individual wolves, forming pairs that stay together for years on end.
Hank circled around the Jeep to get his long rifle from the trunk. He plodded resolutely through the trees without waiting for us, apparently sure of where he was going. Dr. Olsky didn't follow, though. He was just cocking his head back and forth, watching the raven watch us.
Do you think there are wolves around then? I asked nervously. Or do you think the bird is just hanging around where they used to be?
The raven leapt off its branch and fluttered into the air, briefly, before settling back down a little farther away.
Hold on, Hank. It looks like we're going this way, Dr. Olsky called, moving to follow the raven.
His voice was sharp and clear in the frosty air. It was loud enough to make me flinch, but Dr. Olsky just smiled patiently.
Don't worry about the wolves finding us. Trust me, they're all gone. The pack used to have a lair around here, Hank called back reluctantly through the thick trees.
A loud caw resonated from the raven as it fluttered to another tree.
Come, Hank, Dr. Olsky repeated. She says you're not welcome there.
Who says?
Hank asked, pushing through the frosted ferns to join us once more. I stared uncertainly at Dr. Olsky, unaccustomed to such cryptic statements from the professor. His eyes were locked on the raven, though, and he would have left us both behind if we didn't follow him. Then he cupped his hand over his mouth, returning the cawing sound toward the raven.
He's a doctor, you say? Hank asked me.
I nodded, shrugging to indicate I was as confused about his behavior as he was. We continued in this manner for some time, the raven always waiting for us to approach before launching off to the next tree. There was snow on the ground, but it wasn't thick enough to make the hiking difficult. More snow filled the branches on the trees, and the farther we went along this trail, the larger and older the trees became. Hank kept quipping that we were going the wrong way, wondering what the point of coming along with us if we didn't listen to him. I reassured him that I trusted Dr. Olsky, although I must admit my faith was shaken, as the old man continued cawing back at the raven whenever it spoke to us. Presently, the mighty spruce trees began to grow more weak and sickly, with dead branches replacing the thick green ones behind us. The undergrowth around us was growing thin and dry as well, and this trend continued as we progressed until nothing but dead trees with thin skeletal branches grasped toward the pale yellow sun.
Is this what you meant by the dying land? I asked Dr. Olsky.
He turned away from the raven we were following and stared me straight in the face. His neck quivered as though he was about to speak, but no sound came out. Curiously, he cocked his head to the side just as the bird had done, and then a squawking, croaking caw emerged from his throat, nodding to himself as though satisfied with that answer. He turned away from me again to hurry after the raven. I was beginning to consider changing my vote of confidence and asking Hank to lead instead, when I saw small shapes flitting through the trees in the distance. Weary of the dead landscape and encouraged by any sign of life, I pushed ahead through the dry underbrush to try and identify the creatures. The raven overhead began to caw again,
Or maybe it was Olski. I can't be sure. But I was getting tired of both of them and pressed on. I didn't stop until I saw a rustle in the bushes directly ahead of me. The sight so close knocked me back into reality, reminding me how deep into the Alaskan wilderness I really was. I started scrambling back towards the others at once, but not before the dry brush parted to reveal the largest, most grizzled gray wolf I had ever seen in my life. Its fur was matted and smeared with ancient blood. Yellow eyes bore through me with ferocious intensity, and the parted mouth bristled with fangs as long as my fingers. The skin above its nose drew back into a snarl, and the creature leapt forward with such graceful, deadly purpose that I knew instantly it would be impossible to run. I felt my body collapsed into a quivering heap without the strength to defend myself or resist in the slightest. Then, a gunshot broke the air, so close and so loud that I threw myself to the ground and instinctively covered my head with my hands.
"Sarah, move!"
Dr. Olski shouted above me. Rough hands grasped me under my arms and hurled me to my feet, hauling me back toward where Hank was lying on the ground with his long gun. More dark shapes darting through the trees. I counted at least four as we huddled together and watched them circle us.
"Give them another warning shot," Dr. Olski said firmly. "Don't try to hit one, just give them a good scare." "First shot wasn't a warning shot," Hank grunted. "Well, you missed then," Dr. Olski snapped.
I thought he must be right, because the large wolf was still standing exactly where I first saw it, its face still warped into a feral snarl. Then the wolf began to advance, and as it moved, I clearly saw the devastating impact where the bullet had entered its body near the shoulder. Instead of bleeding, the wound looked more like someone sank a pickaxe into the ice, exploding a hole bristling with shards of frozen blood and bone. Another gunshot, but the creature didn't move. Then I realized that Hank had fired a second wolf, which was running along our flank. An explosion of broken shards lanced through the air, catching and spinning the light in hundreds of directions. As the creature sprinted past, in the brief silence that followed, I realized no sound emerged, even from the first snarling wolf still advancing toward us. No whimper of pain, no predatory howl. The deadly emptiness was only broken by the cawing of the raven overhead, long raucous notes echoing through the static moment that never seemed to end. All at once, the wolves turned and fled back through the dead forest. Hank took another shot at one of them when it first began to sprint, but he didn't fire again when it was clear they were all running away. Hank was the first of us to rise after it seemed like they were gone, and he swiftly strode through the trees to where the second wolf had been flanking us.
"Dr. Olski," I whispered, barely trusting myself to breathe. "Those are the missing wolves, aren't they? What aren't you telling us?"
The professor looked me in the eye again, and the horrible cawing sound rising in his throat made me start to violently tremble in a way that I hadn't even done when the wolf was snarling at me. A moment later, Hank returned, holding his long gun in one hand, the other holding up a bristling furry tail over 2 feet long. He threw the tail down at our feet, and I reeled backward from the rancid odor.
"Rotten through," Hank said, "though it's not as bad as it would have been without the cold. That animal has been dead for a long time."
Dr. Olski quietly rose, scanning the branches until he found the raven once more. Then, without a word, the old man began to jog after the bird, which promptly took flight as though begging us to follow.
"We're going back to town," Hank said, his voice trembling slightly.
"I'm not leaving Dr. Olski out here, and I've got the keys," I replied, hurrying to catch up with the professor through the dead trees.
I could take the cold. I could take the nauseating stench of rotten meat from the thawing wolf tail slung over my shoulder. I could take the silent isolation of the forest and the numbing fear of the impossible creatures that had attacked us.
"This was a mistake. We don't belong here,"
Dr. Olski said. What I couldn't take? The hopeless surrender in the professor's voice. Hands on his knees, panting great clouds of frozen breath, the old man stared up at the raven which leered down at us from the nearby branches.
"What fools we were to think we could understand the secrets of life."
Dr. Olski continued to stare at the bird, not turning as Hank and I caught up with him beside the frozen pond he'd stopped beside.
"You want to know why I never returned to the university? Well, here's your answer. I used to think that life was an intricate machine, a complex game that one could learn the rules to. But what point is there in applying reason to that which defies it. Why bother to study what man was not meant to comprehend? You led us away from the caves on purpose, didn't you? I asked. Is this what you were afraid we'd find? Dr. Olsky nodded uncertainly, although I detected a sense of hesitation as though there was more he wished to say, if only he could overpower his own dread to do so.
Keys, Missy?
Hank said, his voice cracking around the edges.
We'll never be able to think this through knowing those creatures are out there watching us. Let's go all get back down to the bar and have another drink and see if we can't learn anything from that tale.
I want to see the caves, I protested. And what about the raven? Don't you think it's trying to tell us something?
She's already showed us her intentions when she lured us into her trap, Dr. Olsky dismissed. Hank is right. We should all leave these woods and never return.
He placed his hands on the small of his back and stretched before turning to trudge through the snow the way we came. I didn't like that we were giving up that easily, but I was excited to examine the rotten tail. On the way back to town, I voiced a range of tentative hypotheses to the professor, ranging from skin-eating bacteria to pain-blocking mutations, or even chemical reactions to some sort of environmental waste. I mean, no one really thinks the wolves are dead, right? I said, unable to hide the pleading tone from my voice. Hank insisted on driving this time, and Dr. Olsky in the passenger seat didn't reply. He was slouched low, watching the raven swooping above the graveyard of trees as it followed us down the winding road. The pervading silence which greeted our entry to town made me feel like we never left the forest. There wasn't a single other car on the road, and I didn't see any lights on inside the houses, despite the dark rolling clouds which made the midday noon feel like twilight. I've never seen it so dark during the day, I commented.
Expecting a storm, I'd reckon, Hank said, shifting uncomfortably in his seat. We have to generate our own electricity here, so don't be surprised no one is wasting our diesel early.
I'm not bothered by the dark, I lied. So how about that drink then? First round is on me as thanks for taking me out there.
Second round is on you too for getting your ass saved from the wolves,
Hank laughed. The sound couldn't persist in the frozen air, breaking and falling away into an uneasy silence.
The raven is still following us, Dr. Olsky grunted. He was slouched down in his seat so he could get a better angle at the sky.
All in it knows where to find us at the pub, but that don't mean it's getting any.
Hank forced a broad grin. Glancing at me from the corner of his eye, it felt like he was looking for reassurance, which felt ridiculous, especially since I had none to give. There were lights on inside the bar, though, and I was beginning to feel better as we pulled into the parking lot. I was looking forward to some hot chowder and maybe a whiskey to relax, and all my scientific hypotheses for what we'd seen that day were starting to run through my mind again. The events of that morning were already beginning to feel like a bad dream, to the point where I almost found myself laughing when I jumped out of the Jeep to charge up the steps to the pub. I didn't make it two steps before I glimpsed the shadow prowling around the edge of the building. The monstrous shape looked almost like a horse at first, but the matted fur frozen into clumps and spikes left no doubt. The wolf and I stared at each other, neither making a move. I was the first to make a sound.
"Get back in the Jeep," I whispered with all the breath I could muster.
Before I get myself a big mug of...
Hank's voice stopped abruptly. He must have seen it too. Slowly, cautiously, I opened the car door and slipped back inside. The wolf turned its head to watch me, and I could see a great hollow place in the side of its neck where all the flesh had been torn away from some ancient wound. Its white spinal cord was clearly visible, glinting in the light from the window.
"Two more," Dr. Olsky said softly. "Either end of the street. Start driving."
"Where?"
Hank asked. The gigantic creature lurking around the pub wall turned away from us to peer inside a window. It didn't even need to get onto its hind legs to be able to look inside. Then it turned toward us once more, settling into a crouch in preparation to spring.
"Doesn't matter. Just go," Dr. Olsky snapped.
The Jeep roared to life, churning through the snow as it spun out of the parking lot. The wolf behind us sprang into action immediately, launching from its crouch to fly down the road at a terrifying pace. The wolves at the ends of the street turned like clockwork, racing between the houses to flank us on either side. I watched the speedometer in disbelief as we approached 40 miles per hour as the wolves continued to keep pace with us. The Jeep was skidding back and forth on the icy roads, and it didn't seem like we could go much faster without losing control of the vehicle.
The thought of the ice spinning us off the road into a ditch, helplessly trapped while the monsters closed in from every side, was too much to bear. My heart felt like it was beating out of my chest, but my blood ran cold when Dr. Olski shouted, "Stop the car!"
"Are you out of your damn mind?"
Hank shouted back. The sound reverberated in the enclosed space, but I don't think I could have heard anything spoken more quietly over the sound of the engine, the skidding tires, and my own pounding blood.
"Two people,"
Dr. Olski replied, pounding on his window hard enough to make it rattle in its frame.
"We can't leave them out here."
Sure enough, an elderly man and a woman, in large overcoats, were both standing on one of the dark street corners. They were huddled together as though for warmth, seemingly oblivious to the wolves racing to catch up with us.
"Not stopping," Hank shot back. "Not for 100 miles.
Dr. Olski reached over and smashed the horn, blaring at the couple as we roared past. They didn't even flinch, though, barely moving a muscle as they turned to follow us with their gaze.
"Maybe they're frozen,"
I began, but the words caught in my throat as the wolves came barreling toward them. I opened one of the windows despite the cold, sticking my head out to watch behind us. I shouted to them in warning, but I might as well have been speaking another language. In a moment, the animals would be on top of them, but the couple just kept looking after us as though the racing wolves weren't even worth a moment of their attention. The monstrous wolf, with its open spine, was the first to reach them. It smashed between the couple in its single-minded pursuit of our car. The people swayed out of the way, never once taking their eyes off of us, as the wolf bound on, unceasing and untiring. More people were coming out of the dark houses now to line the street and watch us pass. Some were bundled against the cold, others in bathrobes, or even minimally dressed in undergarments despite the frozen air. More wolves had joined in on the hunt as well, slinking between the houses or watching us from behind snowy banks with eager and unified fascination.
"They don't mind the cold. Don't mind the wolves. Jail," Hank said. "What happened to this place while we were gone?"
"It's like they don't even see them," I agreed, equally mystified. I rolled up my window against the cold just as the professor was rolling his down to stick his head out the window.
"Dr. Olski, what are you doing?"
"The raven," he replied. "She's still overhead, but she's
heading back toward the woods now. I think we should follow her this time, Hank. I think we should let her lead us to the lair." A long, low howl began to rise from the house behind us, rapidly spreading and being taken up ahead. The sound chilled me to my core. It might have actually been a relief if it weren't for the ghostly animals who finally made a sound, but heads thrown back, staring into the dark sky as the snow began to fall around them. It was the men and women of the town lining the street who were all howling with one chilling voice.
"Bloody hell,"
Hank said, his voice somewhere between terror and reverence.
"What a fool I was,"
Dr. Olski reiterated, "to think blind ignorance would be enough to shield us from what haunts this place." Hardly a word was spoken between us as we wound through the icy mountain road once more. Hank drove with grim determination while Dr. Olski made one phone call after another from the back seat. I didn't need to ask to know he was trying to call people he knew in town. The first three attempts only found an answering machine, while the fourth picked up to a guttural, snarling reply like something halfway between a man and a wolf. We all listened to the halting, growling words, which were not words for a few seconds before Dr. Olski ended the call. He did not make a fifth attempt.
"Is your wife all right?"
I asked, dreading the answer. Then hurriedly, "At least the wolves weren't attacking people."
"That's because there are no people left to attack,"
Dr. Olski replied somberly. "Whatever is happening to the wolves is happening to the people too."
"You're not saying that they're all dead, are you?"
Hank asked, his eyes alternating between the road and the raven flying overhead.
"They're moving, aren't they? I don't think we'll make any sense of this phenomenon while clinging to such primitive superstitions as life and death. They've become something else entirely."
"We could just keep driving," I ventured meekly. "Never look back. Never speak of it. Or we could call for help and maybe they could send in the National Guard or something."
But Dr. Olski was shaking his head. "It was one thing when it was just the wolves, but it's spreading. Do you want to see what it's like for a host of armed men to start howling like the devil? No, the raven is looking out for us. She will show us what we need to know, and then we can decide from there." The storm was growing fiercer by the time the raven stopped. The wind was enough to whip the snow diagonally across the mountain slope, The dead branches of the looming trees did nothing to protect us from the elements. The raven huddled against a trunk to shield from the wind, croaking feebly with exhaustion as we cautiously exited the jeep.
"Thank you, love. You've kept us safe,"
Dr. Olsky said to the bird, his words dispersed by the wind into the gathering night. And then he cupped his hands and caught at it, a long, harsh sound that set my teeth on edge. The raven launched from the branch at once to settle near a small indentation in the snow on the ground.
"Why do you keep doing that?" I asked, though I was afraid to speculate the reason.
I was almost relieved when Dr. Olsky didn't answer, and instead stomped his way to the indentation in the snow, where he began to sweep the heel of his boot to clear the ice and snow. A small opening began to form by the time Hank and I joined him. I looked around for the raven, but the bird was nowhere to be seen amidst the spinning eddies of snow. Then glancing back, just in time to see the old professor down on his hands and knees, and then flat onto his stomach as he crawled his way into the narrow opening he had made in the ground. Hank clutched his rifle to his chest as he dropped to the ground to crawl after him, and I knew I had no choice but to follow. Once I got past the initial claustrophobia of the small opening, it felt good to know the route was too narrow for one of the monstrous wolves to follow us without a good deal of digging. The air was rapidly growing warmer as well, and soon the space began to open wider as the ice and snow around us gave way to rock and frozen mud. Hank turned on a flashlight up ahead that he was holding with his teeth, and every once in a while he'd glance back to check on me. The next flash of light startled me when it revealed the rock had seamlessly given way to a clean white tiling, like one might find in a hotel bathroom. The space widened considerably after that, and soon the three of us were able to comfortably stand in the widening cave.
"This is no lair," Hank spoke first, his voice cracking from the strain.
I stared incredulously at the padded armchair in the corner of the room, at the walls lined with shelves stuffed with musty leather-bound books cramming the place from floor to ceiling. Dr. Olsky strode across the room to the lamp beside the chair, and turning it on revealed the extent of the comfortable study. There was a large wooden desk on the opposite end, its surface cluttered with glass jars where floating jawbones, eyes, and other drifting organs were suspended in a thick yellowish fluid. Some looked like they belonged to animals, while others looked disturbingly familiar to those I encountered within human cadavers during my own studies.
"I told you I never intended you to come here, Sarah," Dr. Olsky said as he crossed the room to sit in the wooden chair behind the desk. "I told you not to search for the lair, but you have taken after me too strongly, never knowing when you have gone too far."
Stretching, pawing, sniffing, behind us the way we crawled in, had the wolves found us already? I saw Hank tense as he heard it as well, and he instinctively swung his rifle toward the sound. Then readjusting, he pointed the gun at Dr. Olsky.
"You've been hiding too much, old man," the hunter growled. "What do you know about this place?"
"I know that the wolves really did live here once," Dr. Olsky mused, lowering himself to stare into one of the glass jars containing the lower half of a jaw. The teeth were too large and pointed to be human, but neither were they of sufficient length to belong to a wolf.
"I never intended for them to end up like this, though," the professor continued with resignation. "I thought I could keep them alive as I flayed one nerve, one muscle, one layer of tissue at a time, until I found the line between life and death, or replacing one tissue with another, subtly changing one living form to another."
The scratching was growing closer outside, and then a howl, low and throaty, although whether it came from a man or a beast I could not tell. But the university kept calling for me to return, and my research was going too slowly. Dr. Olsky sighed. "I thought I could hasten my results by inserting a virus to automate some of my slowest alterations. I never thought it was possible for the humans to begin to change. For my wife."
"Call them off," Hank pleaded,
his rifle swaying between Dr. Olsky and the entrance we crawled through.
"Give them the antidote, whatever it is to make them stop."
But Dr. Olsky only shook his head, a wistful smile tugging at the corners of his white beard.
"You too have eaten the meat and dwelled amidst the curse. I see you shaking already. Do not fight the transformation. The end is nothing to be feared when the distinction between life and death has been destroyed."
The frozen ground leading into the lair collapsed from the digging in a rush of snow and bitter wind. The gun went off, the reverberating blast magnifying in the enclosed space. so that its echoes merged with unearthly howls. The bullet pulverized the jaw of the wolf that made it through first, but its cold yellow eyes never blinked as it continued its lunge.
"Don't fight them!"
Dr. Olsky shouted, the tension in his voice making it sound almost like the cawing of the raven once more.
"They are your brothers!"
Paws and hands, side by side, clawing the earth, as the wolves and humans from the town swarmed into the small chamber, clamoring over each other on all fours. The matted fur and filthy winter coats really did seem to flow together, one creature no different than the next. The howls rose in their throats, the timbers weaving and merging into one, the blasphemous ensemble of the living dead. The gun went off again, and this time it was the professor who staggered back against the wall. He stared down at the bullet in his stomach, gingerly lifting his shirt to inspect the damage. The small, neat hole was wedged between two of his ribs, spreading a network of cracks through his body as though he was made of ice. Revealed, too, was the thick patches of fur and twisted feathers which covered most of the professor's body.
"Death has come to us,"
Dr. Olsky howled with a maniacal glee.
"Do not fight your nature."
There was nothing I could do but press myself to the shelves of books and close my eyes. To bear the wave of howls and screams belonging to neither man nor beast, the living nor the dead. The frozen bodies piling into the room brought no heat, but rather seemed to drain it from the place until everything, even my thoughts, had grown numb. And then in the pit of my misery and despair, a sound unlike the others broke through the madding fray. The croaking, cawing of the raven, untainted by the deforming influence, pure and natural and insistent. The cawing continued as the maelstrom grew around me, when at last I found the courage to open my eyes. I saw the broken and bloody stump of a tail disappearing back up the tunnel. The clean white tiles were ruined with filth and blood, but the den was otherwise empty. Both Hank and Dr. Olsky must have followed the pack back to the surface. Slowly, carefully, as though afraid each movement would cause my body to shatter, I followed them through the tunnel, into the stillness of the waiting night. The wind had stopped, though the snow was falling harder now. I heard the cawing of the raven again. This time, farther off. Then the answer cry of howls as the monstrous pack of animals followed the bird's lead. I don't know for sure, but I think the bird must have been Mrs. Olsky's wife, doing all she could to bring me to this place where I might set things right. I stood there a long time, watching the snow fill in our tracks, then retreating back into the profane lair, I let the snow conceal the entrance and seal me away from the world I dare not return to. How could I risk ever going back to civilization? Knowing I could spread the curse with me wherever I went. Let the unnatural pack prowl through the dead trees. Let them wander until the wind and the snow grinds them into dust. I will stay, and I will study, hoping that one day I find the secrets that have eluded my professor and reverse the changes. Or learning not, to spend forever here, between life and death, my eternal curse to be the ignorance of their difference.